This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Kia ora e ho mā, nō mai, haere mai, ko Hana tōku ingoa, and you're listening to That's The Ticket. Now, today actually marks my last episode of 2025, so I thought it was about time I invite back a special guest. Someone who's very special to me and who actually featured as my final guest on That's The Ticket for the past 4 years. Friend of the show, long-time listener and local creative Dr. Missy Mooney is back on TTT. Kia ora, Missy. Welcome.
Kia ora, Hannah. Thanks for having me. You would have noticed that I did alarmed face.
Yes.
I can't believe I've been doing this for 4 years.
Yes.
Coming on as your last guest.
Yes. I left a dramatic pause in case you wanted to be like, wow, but you just did alarmed face. Very professional radio etiquette there.
That's me. Shall we stutter some more?
Oh, look. It's the last episode. The stutters are here. The yarns are here. The jokes are going to be plentiful. Yeah. Is plentiful actually a word, Doctor?
Yeah. Firstly, we can quit with the doctor.
I feel like I slip it in every week anyway when you're not on the show.
I feel like you say slip it in like there's an element of subtlety.
No.
It's not. It's more like you force it with every fibre of your being.
I do. I'm just very proud.
No.
Very proud.
I appreciate that.
You've been a doctor for about a year.
A year.
When I say doctor of the arts, and I have some questions, I do have some academic chat for you, but before we get into that, you know, because it's the last episode of the year, I thought we'd take a look back. I have actually had you on That's the Ticket earlier this year, and that was for a show you were working on called Digital Afterlives.
A verbatim play about death in
the
digital age.
Yes.
Oh, almost forgot.
Yes.
My own play's title.
You constructed that play. You were also in the play.
Yep.
I was in the play.
You were in the play. Mum was in the play. Shout out, Mum.
Yes, kia ora, Mum.
And some other great local kirikiriroa actors, and I'm not going to list them all, but
And we talked about you, another show that you and I worked on this year was Cats, the musical.
Yeah. Yep. Hamilton Operatic Society.
Mm.
Yeah.
But, like, would you like to reflect on those shows a little bit?
I mean, they happened.
Mm.
They seem like a long time ago.
It does feel like years ago.
Yeah. Quite very different works, one being a musical and one being a stage reading of a documentary theatre play. Both kind of challenged me in different ways and presented different opportunities. So not that it's a competition, but am I kind of turning it into one? Not a competition, but yeah, obviously being on stage is quite a different experience to being off stage or backstage. So I was one of the assistant stage managers
Correct.
For Cats. So a bit of a different role. And I know you sometimes like to ask people plays or musicals.
Yes. I know what you're going to pick, but
yeah, well,
please.
My answer is plays.
Yes.
But if you ask me on stage or backstage, that's a lot harder because I value them for different things.
Yeah.
Like sometimes being an actor feels... And apologies to all the actors, but it feels easier because you just go out there and you do your thing and you get 2 hours where you don't think about anything except the immediate present, right, what you've got to do. Maybe a few seasons ahead if you're like, oh, I've got to do my quick costume change or whatever.
Yeah.
So I like that aspect of it. And then other times I feel like stage management is the easy part because you're kind of in the dark to the side of the stage and you just kind of go through the process, and I like the challenge of that as well, like set changes and that kind of thing. So it flips and flops depending on where I am.
I think if I was to answer the question, because this year I came out of retirement for Digital Afterlives to be on stage, and then I also worked backstage on Cats. I was part of the stage crew. Backstage or production roles, I think, is for me.
Yeah.
I don't regret coming out of retirement. I don't regret any of the acting I've done. And maybe if the right thing comes along, I'll
step back on the boards again once more. But yeah, I just, the nerves.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's, I get nervous as well. And I get more nervous when I'm performing or acting on stage than I am when I'm side of stage. I still get nervous about, like, if, you know, sometimes there's quite a lot riding on what you need to do. So, yeah, I still get nervous about that. And I don't know if you've talked about this on That's the Ticket before, but I think it's common for both if you're on stage, if you're in the band, if you're backstage, there's always one point in a show that's the hard point. And you're like, oh, once I get past this bit, I'm all good. And, that bit sucks when it's right near the end of the show. Because you've got to get, you're thinking about, oh, I just need to get, it might be that you've got a quick change or a hard set change or something like that. And it doesn't get any easier, throughout the season. I can't remember where I was going, if there was a point, but I will end my ramble there.
Okay. And then the last kind of, obviously when you did an interview on That's the Ticket before Digital Afterlives opened.
Yeah.
Now that the show's been and gone, any kind of notes on that? Because it's hard to believe, because as someone who has constructed several verbatim plays now, Digital Afterlives was the first one where the performances were ticketed and open to the public, because your other ones were part of your studies kind of linked in with that, and it was invite only as opposed to come one, come all.
Yeah, I think it was an incredibly, like, positive experience for me, and I think for audiences as well. Like, there was some really solid corridor with people in the foyer after the performances, and I think that it kind of hit its mark. Like, the point of it was engagement, community engagement, to kind of create an accessible and a safe, responsible space to start thinking about what it is to die in a digital age, and I feel that, you know, that kind of hit. And yeah, it's always really, really nice to share something that you've been working on with others. And I think I always have the fear as I get to that point of being like, well, what if I'm the only person who thinks this is valuable?
Yeah.
So it's always reassuring. And yeah, I went to a conference a couple of weeks ago, and I did a paper about Digital Afterlives.
Nice.
And thank you. I talked to some other kind of theatre practitioners and theatre academics from, like, New Zealand and Australia. And that kind of reinvigorated it, because their kind of interest in it.
Yeah.
Because to me, I'm like, yeah, that's that thing that I did, it's in the past, whereas to them it's kind of new ideas. So I still like talking about it, which I think is a positive thing.
A very positive thing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, thanks for the experience. And then I guess that's a nice segue into the academic chat. And so I've got some questions here.
Okay.
Quickish fire round.
Okay.
So when someone asks what your PhD/field is, what's the version you actually say?
Okay, firstly, that's really mean to say that that's a quick fire question.
Yeah.
If you ask that to anyone who's done a PhD, that is a skill that seldom is mastered. But I'll have a go.
I mean, that's why I said it, because I feel like when someone asks you what your PhD is, you can't give the detailed response that it actually is, because it's never, like, simple.
No.
And so I'm like, how do you – I don't want to say dumb it down, because I feel like that's
– No, it's not that. It's just, you know, the title of my PhD was – oh, gosh, I can't even remember it. Posthumous Documentary Theatre Representing Historical Documentary Materials on Stage. So it's a bit of a mouthful, and it's not, you know, super engaging, right? But usually if I'm talking to someone who might not be from a theatre background, or someone who I've just met, or even if they are, right, this is what I would say, is that my area of expertise, air quotes, is documentary theatre, which is like a documentary film or TV series, but on stage. So the script and the content of the play is often exclusively constructed from documentary source material, such as letters, diaries, recorded interviews with real people. And then sometimes we just leave it there. And then if we get to, like, my more kind of niche area, which is posthumous documentary theatre.
Yes.
Which is a term that I coined referring to a subgenre of the overarching umbrella of documentary theatre, where the play or the piece of theatre is created after the death of the document's originators.
Wow. Yeah, and I'm particularly interested in the notions of reality, truth, and authenticity on stage, the ethics of representation, and how the staging of material that is gathered or wrought from real life might impact the theatrical expression of the work.
Okay. 10 out of 10, no notes. I mean, I'm already biased and would like to think I already kind of know a lot about your PhD, your area of expertise and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But no, that was good.
Thank you.
And then I guess my next question following on from that is, do you remember a moment when theatre stopped being just entertainment and became something bigger, became something that you wanted to study and research and evolve into what you've just described?
Yeah. Okay. Like, I know what you're getting at.
Yeah.
But I'll just flag that I'm not, I know what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
But I don't know, it might be useful for people, is that I'm not a huge fan of the binary that we as a society tend to place on art. So, like, sometimes I feel like we minimise the impact of entertainment if it doesn't appear to have, like, an immediate didactic social purpose. Like, so for me, it's not separating, like, entertainment into something else. That's always part of it, the entertainment, right? Because to be entertained is to connect to something. It's to be spoken to. And, like, even if it's just laughing, right, that's huge. Like, that's massive. And it's a quintessential part of being human or being alive, like, that connection. So just entertainment or the entertainment aspect of theatre can be a very pure way of being. And for me, like, as I'm sure it is with other people, like, entertainment is thinking, it is emotion, it is being alive. But in answer, like, proper answer to your question?
Yes, please, if you feel like it.
There's heaps of moments. Yeah. There's heaps of moments when theatre has been that something bigger for me. And, like, you and I have been very lucky, right, because we grew up going to plays and being involved and around theatre people. But I think, like, some moments that come to mind is probably when I started reading plays by myself.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily seeing something or being in something, but when I started reading plays by myself, probably around, like, high school and then undergrad at university, and there were certain, you know, I can recall them, remember them, like, reading a play, and I'd really get swept up in the power of, or the potential power of a play, you know. Like, I have distinct memories of the first time I read Doll's House by Henrik Ibsen.
Same.
And the bit at the end.
You
where,
gave me the script.
Yeah, where Nora just leaves. She just goes out into the cold, and I was like, oh, my God. Like, it just blew my mind. Other Ibsen plays, Wild Duck as well.
I had that moment with Orlando, Blue Stockings. Basically, if Missy ever studied or read a play or was in a play when we were at school or university, she would give me the script to read it.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah, so a distinct memory of the first time I encountered Miranda Harcourt and Stuart McKenzie's Verbatim.
Yes, same.
Yeah, that had a lasting impression, obviously, because all these years later I'm still banging on about it. Skin Tight by Gary Henderson, another New Zealand play. Even Chekhov.
Yeah.
The Seagull and the Cherry Orchard.
Yeah.
Just like the vibes.
Surely the Laramie Project.
Oh, yeah. But I'm trying to think before that, like, even Streetcar, Streetcar Named Desire, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? I was in high school when I first kind of encountered those.
Yeah.
Angels in America.
Oh, gosh, what's the one, Where'd You Walk To, Laura? Glass Menagerie. Oh,
the Glass Menagerie, yeah, Tennessee
Williams.
That's
a line from the play.
And even Tom Stoppard.
Yeah.
Rest in peace. Passed away. Titan of playwriting. Like, So those are some of the moments.
Okay.
I'm wary that maybe it's a bit boring because I'm just listing plays.
No, but this is what we do on the last episode of That's the Ticket.
True.
We get into list chat.
We just list.
I did branch out, though,
with
more academic chat, but now I need to bring it back.
Okay.
And we got to get a really important segment of the show done.
Oh, Rick's back?
Yes, and I will give you the privilege if you want to. Do you want to intro it?
Yeah, I'll do my best.
Well, I'll intro the song, but you can explain what it is.
So do I go first?
You go first.
Okay, so Hannah and I have an uncle, and his name is Rick.
Yes.
And Uncle Rick is a great listener of music.
Mm.
And a great, as an awesome uncle.
Yes, generally great across the board, I would say.
Yeah, hi, Uncle Rick.
Hey.
And he, when Hannah's got the show, That's the Ticket, Uncle Rick gave Hannah a list of songs and said every episode you can play Rick's pick. And every episode Hannah has.
I have.
She's kind of upped the ante a wee bit because she's tried to match a song from the list to, like, the theme of the episode.
Yes.
No one asked her to do this.
No one person asked, no.
But she's taken up that challenge. And, yeah, so every week we get a Rick's pick, and I'm really excited to see what we've got this week.
Okay, so this is the last episode of 2025. It's just before Christmas, so I've gone for a Christmas pick.
Oh, yeah.
And on this list, Uncle Rick, he's got the name of the song, the artist, and then brackets, he's like, Christmas song.
Yep.
And I'm like, thanks, you made this so easy, Uncle Rick. But it's a classic. It's Fairy Tale of New York.
Yeah.
So the Pogues and Kirstie McColl. So, you know, sing along if you know it. And Uncle Rick, this one's for you, mate.
It was Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank. An old man said to me, won't see another one. And then he sang a song, the rare old mountain tune. I turned my face away and dreamed about you. Got on a lucky one, came in 18 to 1. I've got a feeling this year's for me and you. So happy Christmas, I love you, baby. I can see a better time when all our dreams come true.
They got cars big as bars, they got rivers of gold. Through the windows right through you, it's no place for the old. When you first took my hand on a cold Christmas Eve, you promised me Broadway was waiting for me.
You were pretty queen of New York City.
When the band finished playing, they held out for more. Sinatra was swinging, all the drunk they were singing. We kissed on the corner, then danced through the night. The boys of the NYPD choir were singing, going by. And the bells were ringing out for Christmas Day.
I put them with my own. Can't make it all alone. I've built my dreams around you.
The boys of the NYPD chorus are singing, going by. And the bells are ringing out for Christmas Day.
Thank you.
Nice little cheery Christmas banger. Thanks, Uncle Rick. That was this week's Rick's Pick. Shifting the order up a little bit, I normally chuck them in the middle, but I'm like, you know what? It's the last episode of That's the Ticket for 2025. Let's make Rick's Pick top dog today. Welcome back to That's the Ticket with me, Hannah Mooney, and special guest Missy Mooney, whose voice may sound similar to mine.
We have been told that our voices sound quite similar. I don't think they do, but apparently they do.
Yeah. But welcome back to That's the Ticket. I've been getting into some academic chat with Dr. Missy Mooney today, and I've got another question if you're game.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so can you switch your academic brain off when you're watching theatre, or is it always kind of humming away in the background?
Okay, short answer.
Yeah, let's go with that.
No.
Mm.
Slightly longer answer. It's just part of who I am.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and kind of thinking about what I was talking about before, it's not so binary to me. Like, I don't, my academic brain and my theatre brain are the same brain. Spoiler alert. It's all one, and it's just kind of part of how I experience everything now. Although, if this is like a suspension of disbelief question,
yes,
then sometimes my stage manager brain can definitely ruin the magic
at
times. So not so much the academic thing. I think maybe other people, like sometimes people will say to me, oh, just don't read so much into it. And I was like, that's just how I exist in the world.
Mm.
But yeah, definitely if I see, when I go and see something, I'll look at the staging, I'll look at the set changes and stuff, and often I'll notice stuff that people won't notice because they're swept up in the rest of it.
The magic of it all.
Yeah, and so sometimes, yeah, sometimes I wish I could just ignore that stuff.
Yeah.
Because then I start, sometimes you don't want to take on the anxiety of the stage crew if they're doing something difficult.
Yeah.
It's like, no, just other people who don't have that experience will probably just look at it and be like, oh, they're doing their job all good.
Mm.
Whereas I'm thinking about, you know, grounding it in my, making it about me, essentially. Yeah.
Fair, relatable.
Yeah, so that is my answer.
Okay, I accept it, I accept it. Next up, has a piece of theatre ever changed how you understood a theory or academic idea?
Yeah, constantly, all the time. No, seriously, so I hope that I have a constructivist approach to knowledge.
Yes.
And so what that means is that I reckon that knowledge, truth, understanding, whatever you want to call it, is something that is created, right? We build it. So knowledge isn't hiding somewhere behind a tree waiting to be discovered, fully formed. It's something that's more alive than that, right?
Mm.
We build it. It's not fixed. It's not static. It's something we create and cultivate together. And I like to think as well that I'm an advocate for different ways of knowing, that we can know, we can have knowledge not just in, I guess, traditional proof-based ways, but experiential knowledge, tacit knowledge, all of those kind of things. And especially in documentary and verbatim theatre, that's all about, to me, I talk to people and it's an expression of different ways of knowing, different truths, different experiences, those kind of things. So in that regard, in my practice in documentary theatre, the academic side and the theatre side aren't different.
Yeah.
Again, it's the same thing. So that was a bit of a non-answer.
Yes, it was a little bit, but I'll allow it.
But a more tangible example, right?
Yes.
Is
warmer.
One of my favourite playwrights is Sarah Rule.
Yes, friend of the show.
You wish.
One day.
Yeah, she's an American playwright and poet, and her play The Clean House famously starts with a Brazilian maid telling an elaborate joke in Portuguese with no translation, right? And you can just, the stage directions are such that, you know, she tells the joke and the audience know that it's a joke. We know that it's a joke, but we can't understand it.
Yeah.
And what I like about that is it's kind of like a gift, and it's the play or the actor giving the gift to the audience to say, we don't necessarily, like,
objectively understand one another, but we do understand one another as human beings. And yeah, I think that idea of the beginning of a play having an offering or a gift is a really useful tool to think about the relationship between the audience and the performers. And yeah, it's just something I've taken forward into my practice. So often in my documentary plays, we'll start
with a Portuguese joke.
Not a Portuguese joke, but I often will have a prologue.
Yes.
So it's like a soft launch, and it's a way to kind of enact that I see you, you see me, we see each other, and we're going to do the play. Play is the thing now, and we're going together. Yeah, and I think there's something nice about that. And I think, I don't know if it's a Aotearoa New Zealand thing, the idea of having like whanaungatanga or like connection.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's something that's quite important to me in my work.
Okay, well reasoned on that one. We got there. No, one last kind of academic chat question for you.
Yep.
So are there like TV shows, films or online spaces theatre makers should be paying more attention to?
I don't know. Maybe AI.
Okay.
Yep. I don't think I can elucidate much more on that.
Elucidate. Can we explain that?
No. Please. I don't think I can expand that more on, I guess AI is with us now, and I think that theatre is an interesting, place to explore it. But I can think about it in reverse. I think that's easy for me. So what can film and television learn from theatre?
Yep.
And this isn't a surprise to you, right? But I love film and television that have long continuous shots.
Yes, you do.
Or have the appearance of being a one take, right? So Adolescence, did that come out this year?
Yes.
Yeah, so that is one shot each episode. The Haunting of Hill House, I think it's episode 5.
I feel like we've probably talked about this on the podcast.
It's just
before.
A continuous shot. 1917, I think that does have one cut, the film 1917.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
but
yeah.
It looks like it's the whole film is one shot.
Oh, hectic.
Yeah. Birdman as well. I think that also has an edit.
Yes.
The Bear. That's another popular TV show.
Yeah.
And, yeah, any Paul Thomas Anderson film, lots of long shots in that. And I think the reason that I like that is because it makes it more like theatre in a way. And I don't know. It feels less manipulative. It's just as manipulative, right, because the cinematographer, the director will plan like, okay, this is how they have to map out every element of the episode to make sure the camera can go where it needs to go to get everything. But I think when you cut a lot and you close up a lot as an audience member, someone watching a film, right, you're controlling my gaze. And I think that's what I like about theatre. And what I don't like about filmed theatre sometimes is that they'll zoom in. And I was like, no. When you're at the theatre, there's no zooming in.
Yeah. You see what you choose to look at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think as well, when you see that kind of long shot and continuous shots in film and television, it's like theatre because everyone has to be in the same world at the same time together. And I think that is one of the captivating elements of theatre for me, is that it's a community in time and space. And outside of the theatre, so often we have all this wonderful technology that allows us to feel like a community, but we are constantly outside of the right time and space.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know. I'm getting a bit woo-woo now, but
I have a surprise question that I hadn't briefed you on.
Okay.
If it's too hard to answer, you don't have to, but I think I started kind of ticking away on this. But I think it's because you're talking about that one shot experience. And then it made me think about how on Broadway and the West End, more and more, and we're seeing it a bit more with films as well, the two-parter.
What do you mean?
So I'm thinking of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
Angels in America as well.
Angels in America, Passion Walk, play. So all of that could run. Yeah, the idea of splitting it into two separate, like it's more than act one and act two, it's like two separate performances. It's like how if we look at Wicked, the film adaptation of the musical, we had two parts. And it's like, yes, technically the musical is in two parts, act one and act two, but you still get it in one bite.
The cynical part of me thinks it's unnecessary and greedy.
Yep.
But there are some really, really good examples like Angels in America and Passion Play.
Yeah.
Which, but they are epics.
Yes.
You know, whereas I think, yeah, stuff like the Wicked film doesn't need to be two films. And they're both long films as well. And like The Hobbit is another classic example. It's quite a slim volume.
Like 300 pages.
Yeah. So it's not my go-to. I think you've got to earn that. And I also think that's harder because nowadays it's harder to just have people's attention.
Yes.
For so long because, you know, I think now Netflix or whatever might design shows that they know. Well, there's a whole genre of entertainment that is background. And we're getting more and more used to just putting something on in the background. That's not something I can do particularly well. But, yeah, I wombled away from the point. But yeah, I think you've got to earn and it's going to serve the piece and serve the audience.
Okay, doctor's orders. No, okay. Well, that'll wrap up the academic chat segment, unless there's anything else you'd like to educate us on.
No, not at this time.
Okay, how do you feel about apples?
Apples?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
An apple a day.
Oh, Hannah Mooney. You are a silly billy today.
I am a silly billy. But I'm going to be very serious now and introduce another song.
Cool.
And I got to be serious because it's a Missy Mooney pick.
Oh, I don't recall picking this, but
no, well, I was like, I'm just going to pick some songs from your favourite artist.
Cool.
This is a song called Sympathy Magic by Florence and the Machine, and it's the chamber version.
Oh, I love it.
So
I love that album. If you haven't listened to Everybody Scream, Florence's recent album, the chamber version, absolute vibe.
Yeah.
Thank you, Hannah. Great pick.
Say less.
Memory fails me, names and faces blur. There is only after or before. Am I so different? Have I changed? I do not recognize my face, the scarred face that pulls inside, tugging at me all the time, chewing on a feeling and spitting it out. Crouched in a ball gown, anxious and ashamed, vague humiliations of fame. I do not find worthiness in virtue. I no longer try to be good. It didn't keep me safe like you told me that would. So come on, tell me why. To be good.
Very Missy Mooney pick there. That was Sympathy Magic, chamber version by Florence and the Machine.
Absolute banger. Thank you very much for playing that, Han.
I want to say any time, but you basically come on That's the Ticket a max of 2 times a year. So,
and some might say that is too many times.
Yeehaw, well done.
Thanks.
Well done. Proud of you for that one. I mean, I would say that you get mentioned...
Too much? Yes.
Probably every episode.
Yeah,
I do it on purpose.
I know.
To be... a silly billy.
Yeah.
And because I know that you're listening usually.
Mm.
But now I'm going to get into my favourite section of the final episode of That's the Ticket. This is kind of, you and I have done this, this is the fourth time that we've done this, and it's like the wrap-up kind of questions. And so it's like highlights from 2025, so like best book you've read, play you've read, album you've listened to. I've got answers for these questions as well. You don't have to answer all of them.
Mm.
But let's start with the books.
Do you want to go first?
I can.
Yeah, so Hannah Mooney, tell me about some of the best books you've read this year.
Okay, I've only got two.
You've only read two books this year?
No, but I just chose two.
Okay,
so
good.
So Yellow Face by RF Kuang.
Nice.
Missy Mooney recommended it to me because you borrowed it from the library and then I listened to it.
Mm.
And I'm not going to spoil the book, but there's a death in the book.
Mm.
And I always remember
where
I was because Missy and I are runners.
Yeah.
And I run on the same path often.
Yeah.
And then I remember when I heard this death in this book.
Yeah.
And I was running and I associate it with that place. And I thought about it today actually when I was running. Yeah. And then the other book is A Different Kind of Power by Jacinda Ardern.
Oh, classic.
I love an autobiography. I love listening to autobiographies read by the author when I'm running. Very specific, but it really is a great thing that I do and I really enjoy it. And it was just a really well-presented book, I think. And obviously Jacinda Ardern was our Prime Minister here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, and getting a look behind the scenes of times that I remember.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, seeing it from the other side was really interesting.
Yeah. Well, those are great picks.
Yes. Hit me with yours.
So I've read, I think at the time of recording, I've read around 40 books.
Far out. I think I'm up to like 16 or 17. I could count, but I don't want to now because I know the number is going to be considerably lower.
No, it's not a competition.
Is it though?
Well, if it's a competition, I'm losing to past Missy because in the past I've read more than this, but, you know, busy. Life is busy.
It is.
But some of my favourites include Babel by RF Kuang.
Yep, friend of the show.
Yeah, so same person who wrote Yellow Face.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love Babel. It's a banger. Confessions by Catherine Airey, an Irish writer. Really good. Hard out. And then Burn and Wood by Eleanor Catton.
I remember you reading this book.
Aotearoa, New Zealand author, who also wrote The Luminaries and The Rehearsal.
Yes, and you've read both of those. Yeah.
But yeah, Burn and Wood was surprising.
Great.
So yeah, those are some of my top picks this year.
Okay. Do you have a play or nah? Too hard to pick?
I don't have a specific play, but I did write down the work of Jeremy O. Harris.
Mm.
So he's probably most famous for Slave Play.
Yes.
Which was surpassed Angels in America for most... Tony nominations for a non-musical.
Wow.
For a play. I think it was back in 2016.
Yeah.
But he's got a number of plays which are really cool. And, yeah, I would recommend.
Mm.
What about you? Do you have any plays?
I actually forgot to write down an answer for that one, so I'm just going to skip on by. Because I'm, like, panicking trying to think and going blank.
You're like, I've never read a play in my life.
Never. But we can just skedaddle over to albums.
Okay.
Did you like how I said skedaddle?
Not particularly.
Okay.
That's all right.
So some albums that I really enjoyed, and this one's hard because I am an album girly.
What? Yeah, okay.
Yes. But I've got Returning to Myself by Brandi Carlile.
Classic.
Banger.
Yeah.
Dua Lipa live at the Royal Albert Hall.
Yeah.
Because I love a live album.
We went to see Dua Lipa.
We did, for our birthday.
Yes, we did, earlier this year.
She was great. It's the second time I've seen her. I would go again in a heartbeat. She is so good live. If you ever get the chance, give it a go.
Mm.
I've got another live album, which is the Jonas Brothers live at the O2. Don't at me, it slaps.
Their cover of Zombie? Is it Zombie?
No, it's Dreams.
Oh, sorry, Dreams.
Yep, they covered Dreams by the Cranberries when they were in Ireland.
It's good.
And it slaps.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, The Life of a Showgirl by Taylor Swift.
Oh, because you're a little Swifty.
Yeah, I got to keep it 100 on the land, the sea, the sky. Pledge allegiance to my hand, my team, my vibe. And yes, I did the choreo. If you know, you know.
I think Hannah's alluding to a TikTok trend.
A TikTok thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'll leave it there with albums.
Is it my turn?
It is your turn.
Okay, so mine are probably very predictable. But yeah, Florence and the Machine, new album that came out on Halloween, Everybody Scream.
Yep.
The chamber version of the album also is a mood. Live album, Florence and the Machine, Symphony of Lungs.
Great.
Yeah, just really cool orchestrations. And yeah, just big, like, epic.
So
the
epic.
The scale of it is like really, really cool. And Miley Cyrus's new album.
Something Beautiful?
Yeah.
I was going to pick that, but then I knew you would pick it, so I thought I'd give it to you.
Yeah, I'm very boring and predictable. I listen to a lot of the same music. Oh, The Beths, their new album.
Oh, yes.
I can't remember what it's called.
Neither. Something Was a Lie, I think.
Yeah, but The Beths are a Kiwi band.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have played them on That's the Ticket. I feel like it was either last year or the year before.
On my episode.
Your episode, we played Expert in the Dying Field, because you're an expert in the dying field, because it's a posthumous documentary.
Yeah, and is theatre a dying academic field?
Yeah, the joke writes itself. Sometimes. Choose your own adventure.
Yeah, sometimes it feels that way.
Oof.
Yeah. Hey, it's the world.
So that's it for albums?
Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
And then my last kind of question on the, like, 2025 wrap-up section is film/TV chat. So this is the bit where you and I both discuss things we've enjoyed/discovered this year in that realm, so film and TV. Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, I want to see what you've picked.
Okay. The Iron Claw.
Oh, is beautiful.
The best film, one of the best films I saw.
Wow. Yeah.
The Dropout, the TV series.
Oh, yes.
With Amanda Seyfried.
Yeah.
10 out of 10, no notes. And then I can't actually remember if this show was this year or last year, but Girls 5 Ever.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I only picked three because I, similar to the albums, I just find it really hard to pick.
Yeah, it is.
Because I could literally just talk for the whole episode.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Some that I'm going to pick. So I'm going to pick Pike River.
Great film.
Yeah, so that, I mean, you can probably tell by the name, it kind of tells some of the story of the Pike River mine disaster, specifically the, I can't even remember their names now, which is bad, but Melanie Lynskey and Robin Malcolm's characters.
Yes.
And
their fight, I guess, to get justice.
Yeah, and I felt like I learned a lot about it, and I think when it happened I was a lot younger, so it didn't kind of resonate in the same way. And it was just an interesting film for me because it's, again, my documentary theatre brain going of how we represent our past, recent past, and that kind of stuff. It's also beautiful, really beautiful shot at the beginning.
Beautiful soundtrack.
Yeah, and I was saying to you after we watched it, like, it felt very grounded in Aotearoa New Zealand in ways that I don't know if it, how it will land with other audiences, but just the detail. Yeah, and also our brother Jordan was in it, and he was really, really good. So shout out to Jordan Mooney there.
Ka pai.
Sounds good. I'm trying to think what, there's so many TV shows that we've watched that
did
I...
Did you not write any
notes? No, I didn't. Not for this question.
Oh my goodness.
Well, I didn't know.
You just thought you were going to wing it.
Well, no, I'm too scared to just list things.
Yeah.
You know, listing things is... It's scary, but lots of... Oh, Adolescence?
Yeah,
that's
actually
up there.
Incredible shout. That was incredible.
And recently, the new adaptation of Frankenstein.
Great film.
Yeah, it was cool. It was just really cool. Sorry, I'm being naff on these answers.
And actually, shout out to Miley Cyrus with releasing her Something Beautiful album. She also released like a short film that was like a compilation of video accompanying each track of the album. That was great as well.
Yeah, yeah. It was cool. I'm trying to think, but there's lots of. We started watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
It's quite funny. It's nice to watch something funny sometimes.
Yeah. I know it doesn't sound like Missy enjoys watching comedy, but
it
she does.
It doesn't, eh? I also watched Frances Ha for the first time.
Mm.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
Oh, is that one with Cate Blanchett?
No, that's Tar.
Oh, okay. Did you watch that this year as well?
I watched that at the cinema, so I think. Okay. I don't know when that came out, but that's not this year, last year, I think. That's
okay.
Great. I love her. That's great. So.
Just Cate Blanchett in general.
Yeah.
We love her.
Yep, I love her.
Okay. Right, well, I might crack into my upcoming events section, if that's all right with you.
Yeah.
You don't have any creative projects that you want to plug just yet. I mean, it's a weird time of year, so.
No.
No. Okay. No. Well, sit back, relax, feel free to interject if you see the need.
Okay.
But here are some of the cool creative projects coming up in Kirikiriroa in the not-so-distant future. So, Rivoli Theatre has Disney's Moana Jr. running in the new year on the 13th to 17th of January. More info on tickets at iTicket. Hamilton Musical Theatre also have auditions running for their 2026 production of Avenue Q on the 24th and 25th of January. Find out more at hamiltonmusicaltheatre.co.nz. And then the stage is set for Hamilton Arts Festival Toyota Ki Kirikiriroa. It's going to return in February 2026. The programme is out and tickets are available now at hamartsfestival.co.nz. And then I guess last but not least, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and I hope you all have a safe and a happy holiday. Thanks for tuning in this year, and I'm looking forward to doing it all again in 2026 because you know I'm going to be back with an artistic vengeance.
Ooh, an artistic vengeance.
Yeah, I don't know where I went with that. I went off script.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because you describe yourself as a non-creative creative.
Yes.
So what is your artistic vengeance? An email?
Just encouraging people to book in advance. That's my whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's good. I guess, I don't know if you've talked about the Waikato Regional Theatre is on the horizon.
Yes, big, big month in January. They're kicking things off with a bang.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm excited about that, and I assume you're excited about that too.
Very excited. I was lucky enough to get a tour.
Oh, wow.
It was phenomenal.
I'm jealous.
Honestly, I felt a bit moved almost.
Oh.
I didn't shed a tear, but I was it's just wild. And the stuff that's going to come to the city because we have this great new space is going to be awesome for everyone. But that being said, please support the theatres we already have as well. They all have their place.
Yeah.
And it's just going to continue to make Kirikiriroa a great place to live, I think.
Yep.
Great. Well, I'm going to play us out with a song. And then I know I usually have a final question where I'm like, Missy, for the last like 50 minutes, you've been here on TTT giving me the tea. And my last question for you is, how do you take your tea? But A, I think you've already answered it.
Yeah.
B, I make your tea, so I know how you take it.
Yeah.
But how do you take your coffee?
Unsurprisingly, flat white.
Basic.
I do like an oat milk flat white.
Yep, okay.
But yeah, no sugar. No need.
Sweet enough already.
Well, I think I just resonate with the bitterness in the coffee, but yeah, pretty boring, pretty standard.
Great. Yeah. That's a great way to end the show. But thanks for coming on and having a chat, mate.
Oh, thanks for having me. And if anyone's listening, thanks for listening. And yeah, thank you for asking me, Hannah. And thanks for persevering and doing That's the Ticket for too many years.
5 years.
5 years,
yeah.
Buddy.
I know.
Wow. No, yeah. It's awesome. And it's always a pleasure to come on.
And thank you.
You know, it's a really nice thing to have for the community, I think.
Oh, see, thank you.
You're welcome.
Like I forced that. But it's nice to catch up.
Yeah, you know? Good chat. Yeah.
But
see you next year.
But this last track, because I was kind of talking about it, Taylor Swift's new album.
Oh.
No, I want to play this for Uncle Rick because he knows that I love Taylor Swift and he knows that she has a new album. And whenever he sees news about Taylor Swift, he will like come and have a yarn about it.
Yeah.
And so, Uncle Rick, this is a song from Taylor Swift's new album, The Life of a Showgirl, called The Fate of Ophelia. It's very popular. It's got some choreo. Sing along if you know it. And, yeah, Thanks again to my lovely listeners and my lovely guest. You can bet I'll be back in 2026 with more Arts Chat. But until then, mā te wā.
FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.